So, welcome back to Pax Arrubiana and our debate about the Second Cold War here in Section 4 of my podcast. And I would like now to discuss about the hostile organizations. Because in the previous podcast, I have talked about Meet the Hostiles. That's basically this three-level categorization of very hostile countries, partially hostile countries, and the alliance system of hostile Russia, which it has built, and hostile Iran, and basically they are the two most important hostile countries of the Western world and the opponents of the free world. And they have this kind of, all in all, I counted 24 countries, which categorize in that organization, in that level of hostile states towards the West, in some differentiation. I want to be careful on that one, because some of them really we can get into the free world in the coming decade, hopefully sooner. So situation is there is also hostile organizations, yeah, organizations the world doesn't need, yeah, and these are international bodies, some of them already since the 60s, some of them are recent inventions in the basically as a product of the Second Cold War, which we in the West don't want to have, yeah, but Russia wants to have it, and so it's happening. War is not a thing on mutual consent, yeah? It's not that you have to want war as well. If the others declare it to you, and then it's happening, and we should be waking up in that to that challenge and also work systematically to make these four organizations redundant. Actually, they are redundant already, but have a specific strategy to make sure that the 2020s will be seeing the end of all these organizations. I'm very concretely calling out now all these organizations. The first one is the competitor to the European Union, which Putin's Russia has created. It's called the Eurasian Economic Union. It's called EAEU, Eurasian Economic Union, and it's totally the competitor to the European Union. The second one is the CSDO. It's the Central Strategic Treaty Organization, and it is basically the opponent and the copy, the fake copy of NATO. This Russia has created since the 2000s. It's both Putin's brainchild. And the third one is, of course, BRICS. It's this kind of anti-OECD, which he has created of the so-called emerging economies together with China, India, Brazil, South Africa. And yeah, that's exactly it. And this is also an organization the world does not need. And we have to do what's necessary to be sure that it doesn't survive the 2020s. And then, obviously, the fourth organization is OPEC, the organization of the dirty carbon cartels squeezing profits, unlawful profits out of the poor countries, which are not so fortunate to have a lot of carbon resources, oil and gas on their territory. And to another extent, to a minor extent, but also the G20 is a real big problem. Because why? We kicked out Russia from G8, yeah? Now it's G7, in order then to have Russia in the G20 celebrating as a normal part of the global community after all the crimes Russia did in Ukraine and in Georgia and in Syria and in Libya. And then it appears on G20 because it's one of the big economies of the world and the great world leader, Mr. Putin. No, this is certainly not the case. So, of course, G20 serves a lot of reasonable purposes as well. So I don't categorize, it's also a categorization in the level. I call them four hostile organizations, which the world really doesn't need. And G20 simply needs to be reformed. Yeah? It needs to be attached to the OECD, and the OECD as the Union of the Market Democracies, and then to have a General Assembly. And that's basically the G20. So goodbye, Russia. And Russia definitely shouldn't be there, because we don't need Russia to stabilize the world. Russia is destabilizing the world, yeah? And this is the reality since 2014 very much, and since 2007, I think quite obviously, clearly, and you can go back later more in the world history as well if you want. But and this is basically the thing. And now I want to discuss exactly what is the Eurasian Economic Union and the CSTO, who is member, and what about BRICS and what about OPEC especially? So let me first come to BRICS, because it's the most obvious. Russia, obviously emerging in the oil boom of the 2000s, has then started to somehow build up an alliance system of big countries and claiming the West is not open. And in a certain way, we were really not very open, especially towards Brazil, South Africa, India. Obviously, it is important to know that India was always in the socialist world, and the thinking is gradually only improving, but it was like this. And also South Africa always had this claim that we were somehow the West and the white man, and you know, all this ANC-led, it's also a socialist government, and also this Lula government in Brazil totally corrupt socialism. So it was an opportunity. Obviously, the politics have changed in India, and also in Africa there is now much more focus on the African Union, and also in Brazil politics have changed, not fully to the best in some aspects, but I will come to that one as well. So ultimately, Russia was able to build this kind of BRICS concept and really develop it in a kind of anti-OECD, a kind of anti-Western kind of club of big economies. Yeah? And this is very bad. And we really have to work to make the end of BRICS. How to do that? First of all, is, as I have made already a major talking about our strategy to China, obviously, you know, make trade agreements with China, because anyhow China has already all these trade agreements. Since 40 years we have the strategy to give the most favored nation status to China. That's the US strategy. Now we have also in Europe this strategy with the investment agreement. We have included, it was us to include China in the WTO. It's worked very well. China is very successful. But please talk to Chinese authorities to please China leave BRICS. Absolutely, there is no way for China to stay in that kind of framework. If you want to have this Tsai and this investment agreement with Europe, if you want to be in the good books of the Biden presidency now after all this kind of China bashing which Trump did in order to serve his master Putin, it's absolutely necessary to engage and make serious market access improvements and regulatory reforms in China. China also to be in the OSCE for the human rights issues, and have we can do a lot of things together, but leave BRICS. Same obviously for India. India is saying it wants to reform, and it does. It's always awarded as one of the best reforming economy and gets a lot of international acclaim for the recent reforms. So it's very important to integrate India into the OSCE for human rights, the Vienna-based organizations, and that's absolutely important. And it's the biggest democracy of the world, so it's very welcome there. And also for a democracy, a market democracy, it's very good to be in the OECD. And exactly this kind of membership of OECD for India, for South Africa, and for Brazil is the moment they have to leave BRICS. So let's get all three big countries very much, very fast into the OECD, the Paris-based Organization for Economic Development. They are relatively rich countries already, and they will profit, and they will be even richer by good governance, because that's basically what the OECD is about. And it was created for post-war Europe, a very poor region, and it has helped very much. So absolutely, OECD is the tool to destroy BRICS. So the end of BRICS, excellent, yeah? So the global reach of Russia and its alliance network has already a big minus, a big defeat when we can do that. And really the task is OECD here. Then we come to the direct regional network of Russia in its kind of ex-Soviet Union network. And this is obviously the Eurasian Economic Union and the equivalent in the defense, that's the CSTO. So when you analyze the membership, basically in both organizations, it's this European proxies and allies of Russia. This is Armenia and Belarus. And both of them in complete crisis. Armenia just has lost this war, had a revolution, stayed with Russia. is not really European Armenia. We have to be honest on that one. They are a Russian proxy, and also working with Iran, it's deeply problematic, their foreign policy. And if that's not changing, we have to also see that they belong to that part of the world, and we should subsidize them less in the Eastern Partnership. The second one is Belarus, obviously now a full dictatorship, yeah? And a proxy of Russia, and I have already categorized it in the hostile category, partly hostile. Of course, it doesn't have a lot of power to project power outside of Belarus, but also recently it was very clear that the journalist in Ukraine, the Belarusian, was killed by the Belarusian KGB. And so and so. We have this tragic situation with Armenia and Belarus. Then you have in both organizations Kazakhstan. It's a very serious country. There's a lot of progress and reforms happening, but it's certainly very far from a democracy in our understanding. We have done now a trade deal. That's positive. But it needs also to some understanding with Kazakhstan because it has a really big exposure by land with a gigantic, very long land border to Russia. So, you know, engagement and reform, very important. That's obviously clear. Kyrgyzstan is a different case because it's a total broken situation there. And, you know, we really should do the partnership with Kyrgyzstan, invest and support and reform, invite all Central Asia to Eastern Partnership. I call since many years for that, since 3 years, I say. The Eastern Partnership is not an instrument just for Eastern Europe. Involve and inform and include the Central Asian countries. This is very good to do, and it makes a lot of sense. So it's Kyrgyzstan. Then we have in CSTO also Tajikistan, another deeply problematic country, not a very strong ally, but okay, it's also an important country in a sense that it is with Afghanistan, and any country is important, no matter. So ultimately, we have to do the better strategy, do more for Central Asia, compete with Russia in Central Asia, make sure that we do the right steps. For example, I have already called also for all Central Asian countries to be in the Council of Europe. If we allow Russia to be in the Council of Europe, there is no doubt also the possibility for the Central Asian countries to be in the Council of Europe. Azerbaijan is in the Council of Europe, Turkey, Russia. So please, yeah. And it makes a lot of impact, and it makes a lot of transformational power to have this human rights access for the Tajik as well, yeah. That's really the best way to do it, yeah. Then in EIU, you have also the Cuba as observer member, Moldova, and Uzbekistan. They are not in the CSTO. There is also, I will come to that. Let's talk about the economic integration system. Cuba, obviously, it's a lost case for this period. I hope there will be some progress, but that's another topic now. Moldova, we recently won Moldova. So Moldova has now a pro-European president. So please, Moldova, leave the EU observer status. That was the Russian president, the pro-Russian president, Mr. Dodon. He was hanging out in that kind of grouping. But please, Mrs. Sandamaitu, never go there. Please leave the links with that organization. Join Europe. It's our weakness that we didn't grant a EU potential candidate status to Moldova when they tried already so many times. And then there comes a Russian backlash, and then they go there. So please, that's a victory we should really have in 2021. And Uzbekistan. Since 2016, the Uzbeks are knocking at every door in the West to be part of the European trading system, to get more support. They have transformed enormously. Really, the progress is enormously. But because we, in this appeasement of Europe, have rejected it, and there was no common consensus on what to do with Uzbekistan between the EU and the US in the Trump time, so that actually Pompeo tried to do something for Uzbekistan, but the Europeans have failed Uzbekistan, there's no doubt about it. And so they looked again for an observer status, because for Russia this is a big thing to have it. So the Russians were very active and we were not very active. Yeah, actually that's a big shame for European foreign policy. So Uzbekistan, very important to have a trade agreement, to be in WTO, and to have all the necessary support it has, and also to make sure that Uzbekistan really reforms, transforms, and becomes an ally and partner of the European Union and NATO. and to be sure about it, to have a trade agreement, a free trade agreement, to have also a partnership agreement, to invite Uzbekistan for the Council of Europe, to invite Uzbekistan to the partnership, the Eastern Partnership, and do what we can for Central Asia. This is the way to compete with the Eastern, with the Eurasian Economic Union, with the aim that only Russia is ultimately in the Eurasian Economic Union. And I will talk in one of the next podcasts about the future of Russia. So let's come also to the CSTO. That's basically the NATO of Russia. And there they have also, I talked about it already, Armenia, Belarus, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan. But they also have two observer members, you know. And this is Afghanistan. That's a very complicated thing for me. We have done so much for Afghanistan. I don't know. The Russian meddling in Afghanistan has been always a total disaster. So we should really make sure that Afghanistan understands that this is not the right thing to do. And also, again, appears Serbia on the Wikipedia list. I mean, that's a bit contentious. And, you know, I'm skeptical about the European future of Serbia. But there is also the thing that Serbia has concluded a free trade agreement with the EIU, not the observer status like Moldova, but a free trade agreement. Yeah. And it was a big scandal as well, you know. We have funded Serbia so much, we have supported Serbia since 20 years, and, you know, they will never forgive us that we have liberated them from Milosevic, yeah? Because some people seemingly are still very much in the Milosevic way of seeing the world, and that's a big problem. So they have economically a free trade agreement with the Eurasian Economic Union while being a EU candidate country and receiving so much support from the European Union, and also they are listed as an observer member in the CSTO, while I'm not totally sure because there was a lot of debate about it. I'm not sure if they officially are an observer member of CSTO or they just have been at once there. You know, they had also to buy weapons from Russia, that I know for sure. They also wanted to do a Slavic Brotherhood maneuver in Belarus in September 2020. And just in the last moment, the EU and NATO could somehow intervene for them not to go at that very terrible moment to make military drills together with Belarus. So it's a very deeply problematic relation. And also the Russian Ministry of Defense has recently announced to have an office in the Serbian Ministry of Defense, directly a liaison office there. So this relation is deeply troubling and it has to come to an end as well. Otherwise, I call to freeze the EU candidate status of Serbia. And to do that, I think, would anyhow be very appropriate in order to understand in Belgrade that this kind of duplicity with Russia is not possible when you really seriously want to join the European Union. So, I repeat, these are the copy of the European Union, the Eurasian Economic Union, and the copy of NATO. This we have to compete basically by working with the existing members, seeing if there is a future in our side of the world, yeah? If they want to leave the dark side of the world, yeah? And is there a chance for European Armenia, for European Belarus, yeah? And to do more in Central Asia, which is long overdue. We shall not leave Central Asia to Russia or China in that respect and talk seriously with Serbia. So now I have talked about the EIU, the BRICS, and the CSTO. Yes, I forgot one organization that I have to apologize because in the list of hostile organizations, always we have to include also the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. That's very important to understand what that is. I repeat, the Eurasian Economic Union is the copy of the European Union. The CSTO is the copy of NATO. BRICS is the opponent of OECD. And the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is the opponent of OSCD. Basically, that's the Organization for Security and Stability in Europe. And the Chinese and Russians have created together this a Shanghai Cooperation Organization. That's basically a Chinese-led organization, and it's the answer of China to the OECD. That's one of the reasons why I say so much that we should include China into the OECD and get basically also that organization dissolved. Yeah, Because, and they have, of course, again, it's the same organizations. It's Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan. And, you know, this is exactly the weakness of European and Western policy in Central Asia. Leaving Central Asia to China and to Russia is a major strategic mistake. Yeah? We have to make sure that this is going to be an area where Europe and the US, the free world, is active. So they are already in OSCE, but we have to include them in the Council of Europe. We have to include them also in the Eastern Partnership, conclude free trade agreements, work much more there, and also make sure that they shall leave the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and also to invite China in a new kind of new compromise with China, and to invite China into the Vienna-based, or as you might know, I'm in favor of removing OSCE to Istanbul, and to make sure that China joins, but also ends this Shanghai Cooperation Organization. It shall not be a merger. It shall not be us joining them and their organization, but they joining our organization. And then we can solve all these human rights issues in a joint dialogue. Remember, we built OSCE for a reason to talk with the Soviet Union. That was a much bigger enemy than Russia is today, or even the challenge of China. Yeah, it was really a completely hostile and very powerful Soviet Union back then. And we built this platform to talk with that Soviet Union in the middle of the terrible 70s. So it's absolutely possible to have China inside and to remove and fade out this Shanghai Cooperation Organization. So that's for the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. For BRICS, for CSTO, EO, so I have four. So the fifth is OPEC. OPEC is also an organization really the world doesn't need, yeah? It's a cartel, price fixing, quantity fixing, classically. It's the global most important commodity, oil and gas. And, you know, the countries lucky to have it, basically the Arab countries, yeah, and Venezuela and some of the West African countries. These are, in rough terms, the countries which are in OPEC. And they have created this organization for quantity and for price fixing. And they did it. Look, there might have been some justification in the 60s. Yeah, they were poor and desperate and in decolonization. Fine. There might have been also some justifications in the 70s when the US ended the dollar link and the Nixon shock. Good. I'm not talking historically. Was OPEC never justified? You know, there might have been a case for it and there must have been a historic reason for it. And we paid the price for whatever our colonial sins or whatever we did wrong, maybe, might have been, yeah. But in the 2020s, I don't see any reason why OPEC should still exist. Yeah? I mean, we are not the colonialists of the past. Yeah, we are not the crusaders of Osama bin Laden propaganda. We are the free world. Yeah, and do the Arab states not want to be part of the free world? I think yes. That's the whole idea of the Arab Spring. Does not Saudi Arabia also reform at the moment and tries to also be a market economy? And then, please, why OPEC? Especially now this is changed. It's the OPEC Plus. That means that Russia is basically on the table. And this is, of course, a hostile organization. And anyhow, the world has changed very much. We are going to decarbonization. America is also a big gas and oil exporter. You know, the whole situation has changed completely. They cannot control the situation as it was in the past. Yeah? We anyhow want to get rid mostly of the usage of carbon energy. We have climate change. So what about OPEC Plus dissolving and declaring it a hostile organization and kicking it out of Vienna, where it's based, and out of the EU? If you want to have it in Russia, have it in Saudi Arabia, if you want to go the hostile way. But certainly not that we basically somehow say, oh, OPEC is so nice, you have the right to fix the markets. For you, the market rules don't apply. No. If you want to be a part of the free world, then please dissolve OPEC and not play with Russia some price-fixing game, which is funding the Russian aggression against Ukraine, Georgia, Libya. And then we have this kind of battlefield of Syria, which Syria is now, where with the money OPEC allows Russia to make Russia can wage a war against Saudi Arabia in and also Iran, obviously. It's also funding Iran. So Iran, Russia fund this war in Syria and in Yemen and subsidize all these terrorist groups with the money which Saudi Arabian price-fixing cartel is allowing. So that has to end. Absolutely. And OPEC. Kick it out of Vienna. Kick it out of the EU. Don't recognize it. Don't meet. Work with all the smaller countries which are in OPEC, yeah? The non-hostile organizations in West Africa, basically, to leave and offer everybody who leaves the OECD membership. I understand not all of them are perfect market democracies. And so let's make a special deal for every ex-OPEC member who leaves OPEC will get a privileged and assisted membership in OECD. That means, you know, that despite the fact that the market economies and the democracies may be a little bit still to be reformed, in some cases maybe a lot, let's make a 10-year transition where they can already participate in OECD. They can call themselves members, but they have to fulfill the membership criteria by 2030 if they leave OPEC. So Saudi Arabia, that's the deal, and all other OPEC members. And let's OPEC please be the organization of Iran, Venezuela, and Russia. And maybe there will be the one or the other hostile organization likes to have this kind of legacy. Fine, it's their thing. But please, better to close it down completely and make sure it never exists, it never squeezes out. Because remember, you think that's the revenge against the West, the oil weapon maybe, yeah, if you think that like that. But you know, it hurts much worse the non-oil developing countries, yeah. Because we in Austria, we in Germany, and we whatever country in the EU and in the West, we can pay. If there is a higher oil price, okay, it's not good for our economies, but we are no longer so dependent. And for a long time no longer so dependent like it was in the 70s. You know, it's of course not good. Higher oil prices always hurt, but it's not that we are so in a blackmail situation anymore. Because the markets work much better, because we have also better technology and we have changed our energy mix. So please, join OECD, reform your economies, reform your democracies. Join the OECD as the Union of Market Democracies. We help you. If you leave OECD, you get this kind of privileged, assisted membership, which for 10 years we will work and assist you to reform your markets and your democracies. Yeah? And if it takes 20 years for Saudi Arabia, okay, fine. But don't hang out with OPEC and Russia, Iran, Venezuela, and call us to defend you from Iran while you sit in OPEC together with Iran. I mean, that's duplicity. And then you say, oh, yes, we have to help you. We have to send the aircraft carriers to the Persian Gulf. Iran is a hostile organization. While you hang out. And also Israel has to be criticized in that point. It's obviously not a member of OPEC. But, you know, Israel is telling us we should really fight Iran very hard while Israel, while Netanyahu fences up, closes up to Putin, who is the prime supporter of Iran. I mean, this is absolutely impossible and this is totally wrong. So, end OPEC, everybody in OECD who leaves, and let's make sure that we win this Cold War that way. And so, I repeat, the two Russian organizations, CSTO and the Eurasian Union, BRICS, and the Shanghai Corporation, OPEC, that's five organizations. I forgot the Shanghai one before, so please, five organizations, and also the G20. The G20 in this format, no European, no Joe Biden, no Western leader should hang out with Putin in the G20. I mean, it's ridiculous. After 2014, no invitation for Putin from the, for the G8. Yeah? So he was very angry. So suddenly we have then this kind of G20 format and Russia stays on, huh? And makes the high five with Saudi Arabia and Argentina. I will never forget that moment. I made a very beautiful PowerPoint slide about that moment. The Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia and the Russian president, who under this constellation should definitely not be there. I'm ready for Saudi Arabia, but first to leave OPEC, yeah? And then to join OECD and then hang out. So what we need to do? We need to transform and open the G7, less Europeans, because we have Ursula von der Leyen and Mr. Michel to represent them. no Germany, no France, and also no what we have on G20, the Spanish, Italians, yeah. Yeah, the Italians even in G7, yeah, let's get me right. This is, we have no member states of the EU at the G7, only the EU level, too. So this is Europe. And then obviously we have the UK, Canada, Japan, and the US. But also then we should include Mexico, South Korea, Australia. And once they are in the OECD, of course, Brazil, and of course, India, and to be at this level. And this is the key instrument, then the G11. It's like the board of the OECD, the Union of Market Democracy. And then we have a broader group, which is then the yearly jamboree of all members of the OECD. And there, this is the new G20 in a way, where all the market democracies of the world meet regularly, maybe twice a year, and have this big jamboree to discuss about all the issues which are important for the free world. And that's the summit of the free world. But Saudi Arabia only there if it really leaves OPEC and leaves these Russian links and joins OECD, or at least inspires to join OECD. And certainly no Russia, certainly no Iran, and certainly also no China. While I say China is not a hostile country, but China is a very serious competitor, and it's not a democracy and it's not a market economy. So that's also a fact. And certainly not a democracy, while some aspects might be going into a market democracy, and in some faraway future it might also be possible for China to join, and that should be the strategy to get China towards OECD membership prepared in the next 20 years maybe. Yeah? Possible. Hopefully. Break it away from Russia. But certainly not a situation where we have a G20 just as the, in a way, more bigger and more important, more legitimized organization where Russia is very welcome. And then we are the poor old West in the G7, which doesn't understand that Russia is such an important economy. I mean, here we have certainly very many strategic mistakes. And we have to address these five main hostile organizations and the G20 crisis and really make sure that this hostile, in a way, six organization or five and a half, yeah, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, BRICS, OPEC, the CSTO, the Eurasian Economic Union, and partially also G20, that these are basically not existent at 2024. This must be the strategic aim of a serious foreign strategy of the EU, the UK, and Canada, and the US together. By 2024, I don't want to see any of these organizations, or all of them basically just Russia alone. This is the way, and this we have to achieve. So, much to do. We are in it to win it, the Second Cold War. Thanks a lot for listening. And I will release the next podcast very soon. Thanks a lot.